The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I have got to start meeting less angry women.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 9, 4 Scary Stories. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Before we get into this spooky episode, we want to tell you what's happening this Friday, February 13th. It is, of course, going to be a horror movie. And for Again With This 275 on our Patreon, let's watch Vanessa Estella Williams and Tony Todd in Candyman 1992. This is on Shudder. We'll link it in the show notes.
Sorry, can you take that over?
No. Nice try.
Think by what do you got to say it? Three times? Five times?
Five.
If I managed to make it happen, that would have been great. Speaking about Candyman.
Goober.
Yeah. This is not my first time around the block with good old CM. Anyway, that's how we're going to be celebrating Friday the 13th this month. So why don't you join us again with this podcast.com/club. You'll get that. You'll get all the archives. You'll get ad-free episodes. It's a very good value for whatever you care to pledge, honestly. Mm-hmm. So check it out. All right. Let's get into our only plot. Everyone tells scary stories. Guess how many? I won't make you guess. It's 4. There's no previouslys on this one, and there is a reason. People who have been watching the show on Hulu have said that Hulu has this episode as the season's 5th because that's where it was originally supposed to air. Episode 4 was Mitch's funeral. That aired on October 31st. Surely not what anyone intended, but the season premiere got pushed because of the September 11th attacks. Mm-hmm. And so originally the October 31st episode was supposed to be this, and originally the idea was this was when we find out for the first time Jen has a radio show because she's on the air on Halloween night asking people to call in with their scary stories. But in order to make this episode sort of but not really make sense when it actually aired, which was December 12th, producers had a writer named Anna Frick write new frame scenes with Joey, Pacey, and Jack, and eventually Graham's, which included mentions of stuff that hadn't happened yet when this was episode 5, like the drama with Karen, because as we said last week, even though her quitting civilization was clearly the end of her story, here she is back again the next week because of the weirdness. And also Pacey mentioning Jen and Dawson being out of town. So mystery solved. Thank you, fandom.com. We've linked you in the show notes for explaining all of this and how we got here. And yeah, one of the reasons it is strange.
Sadly, probably the most interesting part of this episode is like that it's floating along in the Christmas lane. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Once you solve that mystery or get to the button on that, it's like, why did we air this? Like, just shove it in the can and just leave it there. Who cares? This added nothing to anything.
No, but let's do it anyway. Joey, mm-hmm, Pacey, and Jack return to Graham's house complaining about the horror movie they just watched, which was so boring it put Jack to sleep. Relatable. Jack says that too many horror screenwriters forget that the scariest things are the ones that are actually possible. Joey wonders if she's just lost the will to scream. Pacey snorts that she's the biggest scaredy cat he has ever known. And Jack remembers that Joey was even scared of Grams until last year. And she tries to posture like she's changed. So, of course, when she goes to get a covered plate of snacks, A, in a house she does not live in, and B, that have been left on a shelf in the laundry room she has to walk through the kitchen to get to, like, put it on the island, put it on the table, put it on the dining room table. This house is huge. Why would they be in the laundry room?
Move to a house with fewer rooms so that, oh my God, and not 2 yards in downtown Boston. Uh-huh.
So the lights go out behind her. The front door blows against the frame. A red, like, utility ball, like a dodgeball from elementary school, bounces down the stairs and out the doorway. And when Joey tries to act tough, asking if this is where the twins ask her to come play with them forever, the front door blows shut and locks itself. And an unseen person, who is obviously Pacey, taps her on the shoulders. And she screams and the guys laugh. So that's what we're doing. And after the credits, and after Joey weirdly smells a brownie, like, find something else to do with food if you're not going to eat it, Joey tells them she's going to get revenge, which will be easy for her because she's seen disturbing things they don't even know about. Like, it was Halloween. Audrey was walking Joey to the library, and we cut from her narration to the scene. Everyone on campus is in costume, including Audrey, who is dressed as Carrie from the movie Pre-Pig's Blood. Joey's in sweats, getting scolded by Audrey for not participating in the Halloween fun and being alone in the library on that spooky day. Joey says that with everything that's happened lately, she's not in a partying mood, plus the reading for her class can't be checked out of the library, and this is the one time Joey is sure no one else is going to have it. And they banter about Audrey's costume, which she did not pre-bloody out of fear that guys wouldn't want to talk to her if she's red and sticky all night. I don't know. Depends on the party. Go to the frat. Seems like they'll be fine with it. And if anyone can't tell who she's supposed to be, she'll tell them. Joey does a tongue smile. And then as the scene is ending, we see another girl walking away in a Gap stripy sweater that I had like 17 of in the fall of 2001.
Oh my God, same.
It really took me back. It doesn't say Gap. I'm just certain that it was.
Yeah, nope. 100% had every colorway of that available, sometimes twice.
Yep, it's in the visual aids, of course. And then we get truly 2.5 minutes of screen time to establish that Audrey's sticking around both to try to bully Joey into coming with her to the party and to reiterate that she's concerned about Joey being alone in the library, even though there are currently lots of people around. When Audrey gets scared, she likes to count out loud. And I guess they were really so short on the runtime of this episode that she does. And yet they're not so short that we see, like, Joey counting to herself later. It's truly just filling time. It's so strange.
And this is also a mega day. Like, Audrey has that line about, like, the parties have started. I'm like, but it is full daylight.
It's light outside.
And then Joey's just in the library for, I assume you'll get to this, but she's in the library for ages because she has to go there because it's, like, reserve reading.
Yes.
Kids ask your maiden aunts, but then she doesn't even ask for the reserve reading until
she's the last
10 minutes before close.
Yeah.
Ugh, rude.
We will get there. Audrey points out a guy creepily eating peanuts in the shell and watching the back of Joey's head, but Joey's not scared. So, of course, Audrey has to tell her a girl was attacked in this library who's lucky she survived, and she isn't the only one from what Audrey has heard. And then another student scolds Audrey for being loud. He calls her Miss America. She even more loudly tells him she's Carrie and then stomps out. When Joey looks back, the peanut guy's still glaring at her. She looks a little less comfortable, but stays. And then there's a time lapse shot of the reading room gradually emptying out until only Joey, peanut guy, and a student aged clerk are left. And suddenly peanut guy is at Joey's table asking to borrow a pen. And when she gives him one, he just stands there staring. She tells him, "You can keep it." He says it's not safe for her to be there after dark, so she lies about a boyfriend coming to get her after football. And Peanut Guy wanders off again, only at this point, this is where she goes to the clerk to ask for her reading. So fuck knows what she's been doing until now. Like, time management is one of the most important skills you learn in college, Joey. Thank you. The clerk doesn't get a name, so let's just call him Josh, because he's played by Bryce Johnson, who was Josh in Popular. And he goes to get Joey's book, but there's also a reference book in the stacks, and he gives her call number 4. So much process. So unnecessary. There's another one he has to find for her, too. So Joey asks if Josh is going to be there for a while. He'll be there for another hour. And he adds that if she's worried about the peanut guy, he's there most nights. It's fine. And it's quite clear where this is going, but it's never a bad idea, I feel, to remind the show's young, impressionable viewers, be on your guard against cute blonde guys, too. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
So when Joey finds her book in the reference section, Peanut Guy's there and mutters, "Come here," to her. She opts to run away instead and hide behind another shelf. And when she turns around, Josh is right there. She whispers that she thinks that guy is following her. And he says, clip two.
The creepy old guy?
Okay, this other guy's like 37.
Let's yeah, seriously. I was like, he's maybe 42. Maybe. Calm down.
Josh says he just left. And when he offers to call campus security, Joey gets embarrassed and says, it's okay. Again, trust your instincts. Don't say no. Mm-hmm. Help is offered. Take it. The other book that she needs in the special editions, which is only open for 10 more minutes, and he offers to walk her there. Joey says no. And I hate to have to insert a content warning for attempted sexual assault here in what has become my favorite ever episode for how little there is to write down, but content warning for attempted sexual assault. When Joey gets to the door of the special editions, it is locked and no one answers when she knocks. But when she hears another door open, she ducks into a closet and waits for the footsteps to recede and then runs back out to the reference area where Peanut Guy is back. She screams and runs away, bumps into Josh, screams again. She gasps to him that Peanut Guy's back, and Josh says he followed Joey and Josh followed him. And then Peanut Guy's there telling Joey, should listen to me, sweetie, and braining Josh with a book. Josh punches him, seemingly out. And then Joey thinks that Josh is leading her to safety, but then he just locks the doors to the stairs and asks if she can put up a fight. He likes that in a girl. Yuck. Peanut Guy is a cop, and he was right, Josh says. She should have listened to him, sweetie. Joey only now figures out Josh was the one who attacked the girl that Audrey heard about. And suddenly, Joey's an expert fighter who punches, kicks, and card catalog drawers Josh into submission. And then Peanut Guy returns, rubbing his temple from where he got hit by a book and, or hit by Josh, not the book. He was the book hitter. Anyway, he says this, clip three.
Wow. Pretty much crouching tigered his ass.
I guess that kickboxing class actually paid off.
Oops! That's not a great choice for the music, guys.
No.
I know it's 2001 no. And we all still have Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon fever, but Joey is white, so maybe don't do that.
Yeah. Also, she knows how to do this with a cafeteria tray, as I keep mentioning, since nobody else seems to remember or care.
Then it's time for Jack to set up his story. The stacks might be scary at night, but they're nothing compared to the frat house. When Joey can't think of anything scarier than keg stands and roofies, Jack says he gets enough of that talk from his common-law wife. Joey can't imagine what a guy might have to fear from the loving arms of his frat brothers, but Jack says in the basement of the frat house, the mind can play tricks. And as he launches in, we see him walking into the frat house as a bunch of brothers in tuxedos leave, yelling behind to remind him to get that basement cleaned out. And another content warning here for talk of suicide. In the basement, Moskowitz is drinking Jack Daniels from a flask and looking at old photos while Jack and Brady work. They find a radio and Jack asks where on the dial the campus station is because his roommate Jen's show is on now, which is how we were originally going to find out about that. Jack starts coughing and blames a flu that's going around. Moskowitz offers whiskey he claims will kill it. And for a couple of frat guys, Jack and Brady hold out a weirdly long time before succumbing to Moskowitz's peer pressure. And I guess because Jack is on cold medicine, it seems to go to his head immediately. And the cold part never goes anywhere else, but I guess that's supposed to be the part of the story that establishes it could have been a weird fever dream or whatever.
Right. Or dust. I don't know.
Or dust. Brady finds the picture from his father's year, class of 68, and is disappointed to see that his dad is a long-haired dork. Moskowitz has heard that was the year a brother died by suicide, and Brady has also heard the story. The guy's roommate slept with his girlfriend and the dead kid couldn't handle it and cut his wrists in the tub. But the way Moskowitz heard it was that she slept with his whole floor and the kid hanged himself in the quad. Cool that even in a frat, the urban legends are misogynist. So
yeah.
Jack starts to get faint. Moskowitz orders him to go to the bathroom to puke. And in the disgusting bathroom, Jack splashes some water on his face and sees a shadow pass behind him in the mirror. But obviously when he turns around, no one is there. So when Jack returns to the storage room, Brady and Moskowitz are gone, but a window is open and a cobwebby rocking chair is rocking with Brady's hippie father's class portrait on the seat. And the picture falls off, breaking the glass. And the old transistor radio starts playing Sea of Love, which is clearly pre-1968. So I don't know what they're trying to do with that choice. Doesn't work.
Either. And it's not like they hadn't proven in previous episodes that they had a good budget for music clearances. So yeah. Season of the Witch. Hello.
Right. So Jack hears a door banging upstairs and slowly, slowly, so slowly that someone taking notes on this episode would hardly need to write anything down at all. He climbs the stairs and creeps through the living room, which is empty, but with a fire in the fireplace. And on the far side of the game room, he can hear what sounds like someone repeatedly yanking the knob of a locked door. And he slowly, slowly, slowly inches toward it before flinging it open to reveal a terrified Pledge on the floor of a closet, duct tape on his mouth and wrists. Jack frees him, helps him to a couch, and takes 3.5 minutes to get the story. This is Tad, a new Pledge. They had to rush him because his dad was a founding member of the frat, but they've had it in for him since he arrived. He doesn't want to say anyone's names. Jack is surprised because everyone he knows has been really cool, and very hesitantly, Tad says he got drunk and told his roommate that Tad had feelings for him. Clip 4.
This is a big deal because... because I'm gay. Yeah, I got that already. I'm right there with you, buddy. I don't believe you. It's true. Like all the guys, when they took me in as a Pledge, they knew this. Which is why I'm shocked that they're treating you like this. Look, this shouldn't happen, man. We're living in the 21st century. Maybe you are.
Interesting. Tad says he needs to sleep. When Jack goes to get him some water, Tad makes sure he's not calling for help, which Jack is not. Tad intensely tells Jack he's a great addition to the house and that Tad wishes there were more like Jack. When Jack goes back to the basement to get his cell phone and starts punching in numbers, the transistor radio fuzzes out a sea of love and locks in on some whiny 2001-era pop rock. And that's when Jack happens to glance down at the glass photo with Brady's dork dad. And you guys are never going to believe this, but Tad is in the back!
What?
He's even wearing the same outfit that he had on when Jack was talking to him.
How and when Jack convenient. Returns,
Tad disappeared! It's the 17th scariest thing that's ever happened in this frat house.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Then it's time for Pacey stories, set up with some blah blah about why we need urban legends and whether they serve a purpose other than scaring teenagers out of getting drunk and having sex in the woods. Pacey has experienced some of those situations in his own real life, and the scariest stuff does happen in the everyday. In fact, something happened with Karen before all the drama started. Oh, clumsy. And when Joey asks, he can't stop to explain who she is, instead repeating the first lines of his story instead of just saying she's the server who waited on you when Audrey was so annoying about her Caesar salad order. But he doesn't. So the story is, Pacey's driving Karen home in Danny's BMW on a country road that looks like nothing that would be between Civilization, the restaurant, and Karen's place. They're like fully out in the country.
Mm-hmm. It's the same road they always use for these. It's the same dead man's or dead scoops curve where Mitch bit it, I'm sure.
Probably. Dead scoops curve. Pacey comments on how nice the car is, and Karen says it's Danny's wife's. Danny's Porsche 911 Turbo's in the shop. Karen snorts that his cool car is another reason for Pacey to worship Danny, assuring Pacey that doesn't make him gay. Danny's just so charismatic. Pacey denies worshiping him. Danny's just one of the first people who ever made him feel like he was good at anything and who doesn't make him feel like a freak for not going to college. Unlike, he says, everyone else in his life, which is not accurate. No one in his family except Gretchen ever expected him to go to college at all. And I'm sure none of them knows what he's even doing right now.
Yeah. Also, Andy rooted for him 100% and got results. Justice for remembering season two. Come on, guys.
Good point. So then a Camaro appears, driving towards him with its lights off. Pacey flicks his brights. The Camaro passes them without doing anything, and Karen gets nervous, saying it wasn't such a good idea for Pacey to flash his lights like that. Clip five.
And that's the universal sign for, hey, buddy, your lights are off.
It's also an invitation for trouble.
What are you talking about?
No, I heard about this. It's like a gang initiation thing. No, I'm serious. They send out their new members in a car with the headlights turned off, and the first person who flashes their lights at them, they are supposed to hunt them down and run them off the road. It's a game to them.
All right. I don't know what Mad Max post-apocalyptic universe you live in, but in mine, that's just simple driver courtesy.
Fine, I'm making it up.
No, I didn't say that you're making it up. It's just, you know, some people forget to turn on their lights.
Hey, I hope I'm wrong. But I'm not. Your turn.
What?
He's following us.
Now you're being paranoid.
Am I?
Had you heard that gang initiation thing? Because yeah. I totally had.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had to.
Justice for Karen now, also.
Well, I didn't believe it just because I heard it doesn't mean I think it's real. But it more reminds me of in Flirting with Disaster, they bump you and they take your car.
Totally.
So the Camaro, following close, turns on its lights and then its brights and starts bumping Danny's car from behind until Karen sees a truck stop ahead and grabs a wheel to turn Pacey toward it. So they park at a diner, having apparently evaded the alleged gang member. Pacey inspects the damage and curses that Danny's going to kill him. Karen snarks that he probably won't take Pacey to prom now either, but she can't get a signal on her cell phone, so they go inside. And it's not creepy. It is lit up like a supermarket. It is totally full of people at whatever ungodly hour of the morning it is after their shift. But everyone does turn around and glare at them when they walk in. And then the more we see, the creepier it gets. The payphone's out of order. We get quick flashes
it's out of order.
Oh, I missed that. Good guess.
Oh, this is how little they cared about this episode. That it's like, that's not how order is spelled. No one clocks it. There's like fucking haunted hash browns and we're still going to air this. Okay.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay, yeah. We get quick flashes of a devil clock, coffee overflowing the pot, the N&R fritzing out on a neon diner sign to leave just die, and then something burned black on the grill. I thought it was some kind of like meat, but hash browns makes sense.
It might be. Ears. Who knows?
Sure.
Who cares?
Who cares? When they turn around, Sally, the server, curtly asks if they're standing or sitting. Pacey asks to use the diner phone since the payphone is out of order, and she refuses. Pacey's about to start arguing when Karen points him outside where the Camaro is parked next to Danny's car. And we hear this, clip six.
Okay. Which one is it, huh? Which one of you inbred redneck freaks smashed into my car? Huh? A show of hands. Maybe you, huh? In the jean shirt.
Get out of my place.
Oh, no. Someone in here smashed into my car.
Not my problem.
Oh, is your problem. Is everybody's problem.
Leave!
Oh, my. You really should think about seeing a dentist.
You're supposed to be in Massachusetts. Like, yeah. Where is this Deliverance-esque diner of the damned?
Mm-hmm.
Danbury? That's not how New England's work.
All of you inbred rednecks here in Marblehead. Anyway.
Exactly. Oh, of the Hyannisport, Hatfields, and McCoys? Guys, please, please.
If that guy looked familiar to you, I thought he was the father of the terrible kid who defaced the mural, but he's not. He was the prison guard in Decisions, the season one episode where they go and try and see Joey's dad.
Oh, okay.
Pre-getting, you know, shit painted on his teeth to turn them black. He had normal teeth in that episode. Yeah. So They race back out to the car. Pacey peels out, drives for some indeterminate length of time until he slams on the brakes because the Camaro's parked across both lanes of traffic. Pacey drives straight at it, chicken style, and the Camaro does likewise until at the last second, Pacey pulls the BMW parking brake and spins out, and the Camaro loses control and slides off the road. So Karen whips off her seatbelt, tells Pacey to pop the trunk, goes around back, pulls out a baseball bat, and storms over to the Camaro, Pacey commenting that he has to start meeting less angry women, which is the correct usage, unless he means number and not degree. Karen storms around to the driver's side and taps the door with a bat, and Pacey squares up to open the door, I guess fully prepared to let this tiny woman in Danny's back take on this potentially homicidal gang member alone. But it's a Waymo, just kidding, that there isn't a driver. And they make their exit as quickly as they can. Then we're back at Grams' place. Three kids fill a little time. Some blah blah about their jaded generation having become inured to media. Pacey and Jack both know Joey's still scared enough to check under her bed every night before she goes to sleep. And then finally, Grams comes back. And when she hears that they've been wholesomely sitting by the fire telling ghost stories, she says none of them has had enough life experience to tell a truly chilling tale, because a good one should turn a safe place into a den of nightmares. And her story is actually Jen's and was so scary that Jen never wanted to retell it. So it's the first night Jen's at the radio station alone. It's almost midnight when she puts on the Marilyn Manson cover of Sweet Dreams. And a branch keeps blowing in a way that sounds like a finger tapping on the window. So she props the doors open with a flimsy round metal trash can of this type I haven't seen in ages. Really took me back to college campus crappiness.
Yeah.
So she goes outside, breaks off the branch. When she turns around, the trash can has slid outside, so the doors have locked or jammed or something. And she tries to break in using her laminated student ID. And when it doesn't work, we hear this, clip 7. Fuck. It sounds like she says fuck, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I didn't even notice on first listen, because that's, you know, what you'd say.
Yeah. But the music is so loud, you almost don't hear it. Anyway, Dave, play it one more time. I don't know what else it could be.
Yeah.
So congrats on her for sneaking it in.
Good job.
With the song still playing on a speaker outside the building, which is such a treat for all of the businesses around this college radio station, Jen runs around the back to the delivery door, which is also locked. And then, clip 8.
What do you want? Why are you just standing there?
So,
okay, only in film and television are there just like confusing mannequins in alleys all the time.
Yes, that is in fact what it is, as Jen sees when she gets close enough, you know, falls over and the head rolls off or whatever. That's when the record skips. Jen races back around the corner to the station's other locked, seemingly, door, except this time Jen does get it to open, though only we see that when she runs inside, it doesn't totally close. May or may not be relevant. This all seems to have been cut down a lot from whatever the episode was originally supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets on the mic to apologize for the skip and goes to break, which is when she sees her ID on the control panel in front of her, not on the floor where she dropped it. And then we see a figure sort of flash behind her and another creepy Jennifer. And then what looks like a person hanging upside down like a bat crashes through the window as Jen screams. But if this is just another mannequin, we don't know, because that's the end.
Yeah.
By far the most unsatisfying one.
Yeah. So much shit got cut out of it. Like, I really feel like there was a whole Charlie element to this, that because they had to put in the framing part, then they're like, oh, but now, like, in the universe of the show, they broke up.
Yep.
He picked Nora. Now we have to cut all that out. And it's just like, definitely like the horror movie screaming aspects of these stories. Like, not only are they not scary, but it's like, why would they not have mentioned any of these tales to anyone prior to now?
Yes.
Jen, as written, is not someone who'd be like, it's too scary for me to ever talk about it again.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, then we're back with Grams in the living room saying that is a scary story, and she cheerfully goes to bed, adding clip 9.
I hope I didn't give you jaded cinephiles too much of a fright.
That would be a perfectly fine place to stop, but there's still all this clip 10.
I guess this is typically the time of night that we go to sleep.
Well, hey, don't let us stop you. Unless, of course, you're too afraid to go upstairs by yourself.
Yeah. Unless, of course, you're too scared to go to that creepy little floating house of yours.
No. Why would I be afraid? There's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, we were just going. The only reason we're still here is because I wanted to tell you that when Dawson and Jen get back, we should all get together. I'll cook for you.
Which is what happens in the next episode. But there's still somehow another minute of everyone acting like they're not scared, closing on what seems to be an unseen figure outside watching Jack through the window. And if this is Tad's ghost back to give him the blowjob he didn't get at the winter formal, God bless. Thank you, Tad, for your service.
Oh, yeah. Just like in Ghostbusters.
Exactly. All right. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Dawson / James Vanderbeek, who got to escape all of this, barely mentioned in it, never mind appearing at all.
I'm going to go with Audrey. She looked great. She was actually in costume and she punched in, got paid and left. Respect.
Least valuable player. So tempted to give the name of one of the terrorists on the plane that delayed the season. But I won't. That would be in terrible taste.
Yeah, I was going to say same thing. Basically, okay. WB execs for airing this instead of killing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next time on Again With This, we're back to serial storytelling, no pun intended, as Pacey aims to show off his kitchen skills with a Z at Sunday dinner at Grams's. But after Dawson and Jen commit a PDA fail, will anyone still have an appetite? You can satisfy your appetite for low-rise flares and frosted tips in our visual aids. They're the most important screenshots and GIFs, and we do them for every episode of this podcast. You can find them, along with the episodes themselves, on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Totally Credible Allie Mannequin, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Jaded Cinephile, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is a big deal because... Talk to you next time.
The creepy old guy?